Welcome to Commerce Experience. I'm your host, Brian Walker, Chief Strategy Officer at Bloomreach. Back in March, I headed south to Las Vegas for the Shop Talk Conference. It was wonderful to catch up with so many old friends, past colleagues, partners, and of course, many customers. The energy at the show was palpable during the days and well into the evenings. While on site, I had the chance to sit down with Pete Franco, president of LivingSpaces.com. Living Spaces is a home furnishing retailer with over 35 large format stores throughout the southern tier of the United States, and they pair that with a robust online presence. Living Spaces not only sells an impressive assortment of furniture and accessories, they seek to stir customers' imagination and inspire great design, with an online presence that supports both the online and in-store shopping journeys of their customers. Living Spaces is a client of Bloomreach's and is doing great things with our engagement and personalization solutions, which we touch on during the conversation. Pete himself is an experienced digital leader who for the past 10 years has brought his leadership and expertise to Living Spaces, leading the growth of the digital commerce and marketing channels through a transformative period in the company's history, one that led them to be among the most innovative in the home furnishings retail industry, including through the explosive growth during the pandemic. Before we dive into the interview, I'd like to set the scene. We're on the second floor of Bloomreach's booth at Shop Talk, one of the largest retail-focused conferences in the world. So pardon the background buzz of the conference during our conversation. Enjoy the show.
Pete, thank you so much for taking some time out here at the show to sit down and talk. I really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Pete, we always start the podcast with kind of the same first question. So what was your first role or job that dealt with e-commerce or digital marketing?
Yeah, so my first job was as a product manager for a legal services startup in San Francisco. Straight out of business school, had never worked in digital. It was an amazing experience.
How long ago was it?
So that was 13 years ago now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then how did you make the transition from kind of legal services to more kind of traditional retail e-commerce?
Yeah, so I was there for about 3 years, product manager, user experience, got a little bit into product marketing. And at one point, we discovered the solution called Optimizely.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's heard of them now, but they were relatively new. Just fell in love with A/B testing. Loved waking up every morning, coming and looking at the results. It was so much better than, I think it was called Google Experiments back then. And it was just a game changer for us, learning more about what worked and what didn't work. So I decided to start an agency.
Oh, very interesting.
To get that tool in front of more people. And did that for a couple of years, had some great success. But one of our clients, which was Living Spaces, the whole time they were saying, stop doing that, come work with us, myself and my partners. And finally, they kind of convinced us. So started there almost 10 years ago.
So you went from being the agency providing the services to being the client, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Fascinating.
We went in house. three of us were the founding e-com team at Living Spaces, which was previously, again, our client. And I think what ultimately did it was love the agency world, but there was so much to work on. Aside from just A/B testing, great company to work for, very progressive ownership and leadership team there. And it's been a great, almost 10 years.
Wow,
up in June.
That's fantastic. So obviously Living Spaces works in the home furnishings category, and that's been obviously a category that's seen quite a lot of like inflection and change over the last number of years, obviously with the pandemic, people looking to refurnish their homes as they were spending so much time at home, maybe create, study and workspaces and so on, and redoing their patios and backyards, and obviously drove a ton of demand. Our Commerce Pulse data shows that home furnishings is holding its own post-pandemic, but clearly the demand, has kind of shifted. And I'd love to just kind of hear you kind of share what you're seeing, in this sort of post-pandemic kind of environment. How is that impacting your business, especially with the housing market in a bit of a, I don't know if we'd say stall a bit as people wait for interest rates to hopefully come down and things of that nature. What are you seeing in the business from that perspective?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing all those trends that you just touched on. Huge ride there. That was a lot of fun there. The pandemic as a whole wasn't fun.
Yeah.
But the boost it gave to e-com and overall home was just a huge shot in the arm. And we pretty much sustained that. I think we had the question, is it going to pull back to pre-pandemic? And we have not seen that. You know, the economic side of things, I think we were very lucky. We're still growing. Most home is very regional.
Yeah.
A lot of the big players are regional. And we obviously have aspirations to be a nationwide brand. And luckily, as we've grown into markets where people are moving. We're in Phoenix. We're in Austin. We're in San Antonio. And these are all great new markets. Our products have resonated. And I think it's helped offset our core market, which has always been California, where there's been the movement away from. And in those markets, yeah, not where it was a year ago or 2 years ago, the home market, but we are seeing purchases. We are seeing people moving into new homes. And we're really leaning on those markets. At the same time, there is a shift to online shopping. And what we'd like to think is, you know, a unified shopping experience.
Yep.
And that's our goal. We want to be best in class. We want to take market share. And having that clean in-store to online experience, it can still win. You can still win with that. It's a great formula. And that's really what we're focused.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think actually, like, the mainstream media, for example, sometimes gets a little caught up in this idea, like, oh, we're post-pandemic and people are shifting behaviors back somehow. I think that really misses the point as to the role of digital and the shopping journey, especially in categories where there's sort of like a high considered purchase, right? Where digital is going to play a huge role in even deciding where to shop and certainly in making decisions around product. Yeah, they may still come in and visit the store, and hopefully that's an opportunity to help them kind of fill out and accessorize and decorate and so on. But it's really about bringing the channels together in a consistent way and kind of matching the personalization kind of across channel. Those are big opportunities. And I think, you know, in your category especially, it's really great to hear how that's kind of playing out your business. And I think it's you're right on there.
Yeah, and as we made some of those investments, Bloomreach being one of them, on the engagement side, we also have a big advantage because we collect emails for a high percentage of our in-store shoppers. Obviously, there's fulfillment, there's delivery. They want to hear more about other products. And it's just a big focus for us. And then being so invested in the web experience and the signed in web experience allows us to have a great 360-degree view of the customer. And it just made us a lot more sure-footed and where we advertise, what campaigns work for online, which work for maybe in-store, and which work great overall. And having those tools at a time like this has just been really, really critical. And it's giving us visibility we didn't have before. And if you make those investments, you're just able to kind of navigate the rough seas a little bit more smoothly. And just, we use the word sure-footed a lot. It's just, you could be sure-footed. You're still in that economic reality, what it is, whatever it is, but you can pivot and change and invest where you need to.
I mean, we see this in our Commerce Pulse data, right? You know, there's categories that are doing very, very well in the current economic environment, and there's categories that aren't, and it's not evenly distributed. So even if e-commerce as a whole has kind of started to, the growth curve has come down. It's still growing faster than overall retail in the United States, but it's certainly not growing at the pandemic levels. But we really need to break it down, right? Yeah. And to your point, it's also regional, in addition to kind of segment. And I think that's really important to note. And I think, imagine too, like with kind of an omni-channel strategy, it also helps you think about where you want to put a store.
Yes.
When you can look at the data and you can understand how customers are engaging, and obviously purchase and research patterns kind of helps you think about even your physical store expansion as well.
Yeah. So something for those of you that have never been in a Living Spaces, they're huge stores and they keep getting bigger. So with every new one we open, we just make it bigger. Average size, about 130,000 square feet.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're huge. And we want them to be destinations. We aren't going to enter a market and put five stores in the market. We expect that our guests to potentially invest in a drive, but when they get there, it'll have all been worth it. And they're going to, in our new stores, we have bars, we have coffee shops, we have restaurants, we have kids play areas. So for us, it's really helped that strategy we've always had, and we keep doubling down on it. And as we open new markets, maybe in the past we would have said, well, based on our media strategies, we got to get to two or three stores. And now we no longer think that. We say, okay, let's get the store, let's make it a destination, get them excited about the brand online, have them drive to a store. And for those of those that maybe it's a little bit outside, we can still offer next day delivery because we have the fulfillment network. And the web can kind of fill in those missing pieces where we just have not chosen to maybe invest a store yet. So they work in harmony for us in terms of our strategy, both in store. I think when you take a step back, probably our stores wouldn't be making the investment in restaurants and bars and cafes and kid play areas. You know, if you need to have five of them, but if you can have that one destination because the web is doing so great and kind of plays so well together, then we could just really go in on these kind of unique experiences.
I love that. Is there one signature dish at the restaurant that we should always try if we go to a Living Spaces?
So one signature dish. I was trying to lose weight, so I've always had the salad. But there isn't the one signature yet. And we actually are in the spirit of testing. Each one has kind of a different concept. So we haven't nailed down the Swedish meat.
You knew what I was going with that.
We don't have the Southwest tacos yet as our signature, but maybe we'll end up there.
Yeah, okay, great. Yeah. Well, obviously, we're here at Shop Talk, yeah. and I would love to just kind of get your impressions from the show. I think it's, you mentioned earlier when we were talking before the podcast recording that you hadn't been back at a show for a while, obviously, with the pandemic and so on. But what were sort of some of your takeaways from the show? And obviously, those of you listening, you may be familiar, but Shop Talk also has some interesting aspects to how it organizes the show.
Yes.
Creates meeting opportunities between the vendor community and the retailer and brand community. And I'm just interested in your thoughts from the show.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the show. This is my third Shop Talk, but I had it, I think, 4 years. I also have a young son, which has kept me busy. So between that and the pandemic, just hadn't been to one. And just the energy level, the number of solutions, from startups to, you know, very established enterprise solutions. It's just a little bit of everything. In terms of the format, I've always liked the format, the meetups we participate. We have three team members from Living Spaces with different areas of focus. And I would say the thing that has surprised me most, so something changed a little bit with the format this year, where as the retailer, we had to also say who we were interested in meeting with. And in the process of doing that, I must have read 1,000 company descriptions.
Wow. Yeah.
And the types of solutions now, it was very e-commerce, digital focused, but now lots of merchandising solutions, lots of supply chain solutions. And in addition to kind of top of funnel, media solutions, media network. So I think the diversity of solution providers has definitely increased. And then the people attending have diversified. So I think it's been a really well managed show, and I look forward to coming every year now.
Yeah, I would tend to agree, and certainly from a vendor perspective, the format, I think most of the vendor community would agree, is very attractive and works well to get an opportunity to talk, even if it's only 15 minutes, right?
Yeah.
It's an opportunity to discover, like, is there a fit? Maybe there isn't. But also, I always try, if I'm in a meeting like that, to provide some help.
Yeah.
Maybe steer them in a direction because I've been in this market for a very long time. And to that point, it is kind of astonishing how big the technology ecosystem has become.
Oh, yeah.
around e-commerce and digital marketing. And it's very, you walk into the exhibit hall here and you just can't help but recognize how important this obviously has become to the overall economy.
Yeah.
And to how retail and marketing works now in the world, but certainly in North America. And to see, you know, just the number of people here looking for solutions to different kinds of business problems, and it's kind of overwhelming. And I guess to that point, you know, I'd love to kind of, you've just been obviously through a recent, you know, procurement process.
Yes.
You know, kind of reflecting on like how much there is to sort through. And obviously the cost of making a mistake is pretty high, right?
Yes.
It's time, it's money, or it's lost opportunity with opportunity costs. I'd love to just kind of get your thoughts on what you look for as you go through a procurement process. What are you, you know, when you're trying to select a technology solution for a specific business problem, and what some of the guidance would be for others as they kind of approach that? What are some of the best practices that you would say, here's some things to think about? And obviously we're in a little different era now.
Yeah.
With more modern architectures and APIs and so on. But I don't want to speak too long. I'd love to hear your thoughts on what are some of the things you have found really work well to make sure you're picking the right vendors to help support what you're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, so I think being able to find solutions that provide value is a core part of my job. It's not ancillary, it's core. And along the way, I think we have 30, 40 solution partners at this point. We've learned some things the hard way. And some of the things that, you know, it's common advice, but not always followed. The reference call.
Yep.
Yeah, is it just critical? Depends where some companies are more familiar early, more comfortable earlier or later. But I love when a company's willing to do a reference call or offer up a reference call earlier. But there's nothing beats kind of proof of concept. Yep. We did that for our CDP selection. We learned so much along the way that was applicable regardless of who we would have, you know, gone to work with. But, you know, it's where the rubber meets the road. Real time is not real time. When you really go in and try to do an API call, and you said, you got to wait 90 seconds. I'm not going to name names, but like, they said real time. Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's real time-ish. you know, that's one example where if we hadn't implemented it, but we basically went through
which is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
We should minimize.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
From a client perspective, like supporting POCs and trials and doing that well,
yeah,
you need to be recognized that you've got to put effort in.
Oh yeah, right? Yeah. There's no shortcut on that part. And you learned.
Yeah.
Can I reach out to your support team? It's some vendors don't want you reaching out to support in a POC phase. Okay, then that's one thing. That's an unknown. What is your support going to be like when we go live? Yeah, go ahead. Email support. Oh, that, and you get the support you need. That's nice. And, you know, just try to walk the shoes of an actual client. And we found it's always worthwhile. We never regret it. Now, do the resources always allow for it? Maybe not. Does the timing not allow for it? Maybe not. But when you can, we never regret it. And getting as close to what it will be like afterwards. And we always learn. And then you learn the nuances and the differences in different companies. Some have strengths in one area and some areas, and others have strengths in other areas. But yeah, that's where we really play now. And, you know, I think one thing that's really changed is the solution providers are becoming more comfortable with that. And ones that aren't kind of stick out. Like, why don't you want to do a POC? Why can't we do a mini implementation? Why can't we kind of get a real feel for the solution? And I think the providers that embrace that as part of their kind of a selling process and even propose it up front, like they're the ones that are winning our attention. And those are the ones we're choosing to work with first. Always great to see companies that embrace that model as well.
Yeah, I mean, from a vendor perspective, I've been in the vendor space for a very long time.
Yeah.
Some of that has to do with, like I said earlier, kind of the architecture and nature of the solutions today.
Yeah.
Make it more possible. But I think it's important that as a vendor that you earn the trust of a customer, right? And ideally, if a customer has challenges implementing or the value isn't there, or they're just going to either it's going to lead to a failed project or they're going to churn. Like earn the trust of the customer, and you've got a long-term relationship that both sides are going to benefit from over time. And yeah, it's a lot of work from the vendor side to support these things. And, you know, both sides have to actually come together. The best POCs are ones where, you know, both sides are collaborating and ensuring that not only do you understand how the solution works and so on, but you're getting the support you need and that your team is actually being enabled so they get a feel for what it's going to be like, right? And so both sides really ideally need to come to the table. It depends on the nature of the solution, of course, but I would completely concur. If you're a client looking for a solution, you know, nothing can really replicate the trial or the POC. And depending on the nature of the solution, those are kind of two different kinds of things, which we don't necessarily have time to get into here. But, you know, it also kind of depends on, you know, how much data you need to use to really experience the solution. And does the solution need any training on that data in order to really demonstrate how effective it can be? So that's kind of the difference between a POC and a trial as well. Well, Pete, this has been great. I really appreciate, again, you sitting down with us here at the show, taking some time out. Final question. We always ask every guest on the podcast, and it is very, I think, appropriate since we're here. We just talked about the vendor hall and so on. And the last question we always ask is there a futuristic technology innovation that you're really looking forward to seeing become a practical reality?
Yeah.
Or alternatively, something you think is really overhyped that you really think we should just stop talking about and move on. I'm interested in your thoughts.
Yeah. So, you know, ChatGPT is the word everyone's talking about, generative AI. We are definitely believers. We do not think it's hype. The applications, I think, are going to be many. We've started using it in many different applications. And I think where it's going to get really interesting is kind of the historically, you know, between marketing, e-com, our guest services team, we've thought of it as a very linear path. And the best companies are not going to look at it that way. And giving just stupendous post-purchase experiences, be very accessible, you know, SMS, browser notifications, WhatsApp, all these different messaging channels, and you layer in generative AI, general AI, and I think companies that really excel there are fun to do business with, are very accessible. You know, that wall between, you know, customer and retailer kind of getting blurry. You look forward to our messages. I think the companies that nail that are going to just drive tons of loyalty, are going to see their acquisition costs go down. You're going to have great promoters in the marketplace. I say, you know, Living Spaces, that's where we go buy furniture. Like, why would I go anywhere else? They know me, they understand me, they're easy to get help from, and they're very fun to interact with. And why would I go anywhere else? And
I don't even like meatballs.
And I don't even like meatballs. we need a signature dish with this fat house, but yeah, it is. That's our goal, and with some of the technology and the partnerships that are out there, I think it could come to reality, and it will.
Yeah, I think, you know, first of all, we completely concur around the impact generative AI will have on the back office, kind of how things get done, the opportunity to really scale personalization, because it kind of unlocks some barriers and costs that have kind of inhibited personalization from having its full impact, and then, you know, we'll have to see, but I think there's definitely an opportunity for the customer experience to go through some pretty interesting evolutions, which we'll have to see how those end up working out. But creating more conversational experiences that I can bring with me into the home or while I'm on my phone, but obviously also in your stores, right? And especially in an environment where I'm furnishing my home and all these kind of things, there's all different ways that could become useful. at inside the customer experience and complement what you're already doing. And again, as you said, right, kind of take on all those different characteristics of the kinds of brands and businesses we want to interact with. So exactly. We very much see it the same way. And I think the next few years, we'll see some very interesting new experiments around customer experience and a lot of enhancements to how these tools support marketers and merchants like Living Spaces. Well, Pete, thank you so much for your time again. It was a real pleasure, and have a wonderful rest of the show, and look forward to seeing you again soon.
Yep, likewise. Thank you so much.